and on the right. Such, we read, was the reward which the blessed Job obtained, who was certainly crowned for a victory on the right hand, when he was the father of 7 sons and walked as a rich and wealthy man, and yet offered daily sacrifices to the Lord for their purification, in his anxiety that they might prove acceptable and dear to God rather than to himself. When his gates stood open to every stranger, when he was feet to lame and eyes to blind, 3:12. When the shoulders of the suffering were kept warm by the wool of his sheep, when he was a father to orphans and a husband to widows, when he did not even in his heart rejoice at the fall of his enemy. And again it was the same man who, with still greater virtue, triumphed over adversity on the left hand. When deprived in one moment of his 7 sons, he was not as a father overcome with bitter grief, but as a true servant of God rejoiced in the will of his Creator. When instead of being a wealthy man he became poor, naked instead of rich, pining away instead of strong, despised and contemptible instead of famous and honorable, and yet preserved his fortitude of mind unshaken. When, lastly, bereft of all his wealth and substance, he took up his abode on the dunghill, and like some stern executioner of his own body, scraped with a potsherd the matter that broke out, and plunging his fingers deep into his wounds, dragged out on every side masses of worms from his limbs. And in all this he never fell into despair and blasphemy, nor murmured at all against his Creator. Moreover, also so little was he overcome by such a weight of bitter temptations, that the cloak, which out of all his former property remained to cover his body, and which alone could be saved from destruction by the devil, because he was clothed with it, he rent and cast off, and covered with it his nakedness, which he voluntarily endured, while a terrible robber had brought upon him. The hair of his head, too, which was the only thing left untouched out of all the remains of his former glory, he shaved and cast to his tormentor. And cutting off even that which his savage foe had left to him, he exulted over him and mocked him with that celestial cry of his, "If we have received good at the hand of the Lord, should we not also receive evil? Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. As it hath pleased the Lord, so is it done. Blessed be the name of the Lord." 3:13. I should also with good reason call Joseph ambidextrous, as in prosperity he was very dear to his father, affectionate to his brethren, acceptable to God, and in adversity was chaste and faithful to the Lord, in prison most kind to the prisoners, forgetful of wrongs, generous to his enemies, and to his brethren who were envious of him, and as far as lay in their powers, his murderers, he proved not only affectionate, but actually munificent. These men, then, and those who are like them, are rightly termed ambidextrous, for they can use either hand as the right hand, and passing through those things which the apostle enumerates, can fairly say, through the armor of righteousness on the right hand and on the left, through honor and dishonor, through evil report and good report, etc. And of this right and left hand Solomon speaks as follows in the Song of Songs, in the person of the bride, "His left hand is under my head, and his right hand shall embrace me." 3:14. And while this passage shows that both are useful, yet it puts one under the head, because misfortunes ought to be subject to the control of the heart, since they are only useful for this, viz., to train us for a time and discipline us for our salvation, and make us perfect in the matter of patience. But the right hand she hopes will ever cling to her, to cherish her and hold her fast in the blessed embrace of the bridegroom, and unite her to him indissolubly. We shall then be ambidextrous when neither abundance nor want affects us, and when the former does not entice us to the luxury of dangerous carelessness, while the latter does not draw us to despair and complaining. But when, giving thanks to God in either case alike, we gain one and the same advantage out of good and bad fortune. And such that truly ambidextrous man, the teacher of the Gentiles, testifies that he himself was when he says, "For I have learnt in whatsoever state I am to be content therewith. I know both how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. Everything and in all things I am instructed, both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things in him which strengtheneth me." 3:15. Chapter 11. Of the two kinds of trials which come upon us in a threefold way. Well, then, though we say that trial is twofold, i.e., in prosperity and in adversity, yet you must know that all men are tried in three different ways, often for their probation, sometimes for their improvement, and in some cases because their sins deserve it. For their probation, indeed, as we read that the blessed Abraham and Job and many of the saints endured countless tribulations, or this which is said to the people in Deuteronomy by Moses, that thou shalt remember all the ways through which the Lord thy God hath brought thee for 40 years through the desert, to afflict thee and to prove thee, and that the things that were in thy heart might be made known, whether thou wouldst keep his commandments or no. 3:16. And this which we find in the Psalms, I proved thee at the waters of strife. 3:17. To Job also, thinkest thou that I have spoken for any other cause than that thou mightest be seen to be righteous? 3:18. But for improvement, when God chastens his righteous ones for some small and venial sins, or to raise them to a higher state of purity, and delivers them over to various trials, that he may purge away all their unclean thoughts, and to use the prophet's word, the dross, which he sees to have collected in their secret parts, and may thus transmit them like pure gold to the judgment to come, as he allows nothing to remain in them for the fire of judgment, to discover when hereafter it searches them with penal torments, according to this saying, many are the tribulations of the righteous. 3:19. And, my son, neglect not the discipline of the Lord, neither be thou wearied whilst thou art rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. For what son is there whom the Father doth not correct? But if ye are without chastisement, whereof are all our partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. 3:20. And in the Apocalypse, those whom I love I reprove and chasten. 3:21. To whom under the figure of Jerusalem the following words are spoken by Jeremiah in the person of God. For I will utterly consume all the nations among which I scattered thee, but I will not utterly consume thee, but I will chastise thee in judgment, that thou mayest not seem to thyself innocent. 3:22. And for this life-giving cleansing David prays when he says, prove me, O Lord, and try me, turn my reins and my heart. 3:23. Isaiah also, well knowing the value of this trial, says, O Lord, correct us but with judgment, not in thine anger. 3:24. And again, I will give thanks to thee, O Lord, for thou wast angry with me. Thy wrath is turned away, and thou hast comforted me. 3:25. But as a punishment for sins, the blows of trial are inflicted, as where the Lord threatens that he will send plagues upon the people of Israel. I will send the teeth of beasts upon them with the fury of creatures that trail upon the ground. 3:26. And in vain have I struck your children, they have not received correction. 3:27. In the Psalms also, many are the scourges of the sinners. 3:28. And in the Gospel, behold, thou art made whole, now sin no more, lest a worse thing happen unto thee. 3:29. We find it is true a fourth way also in which we know on the authority of Scripture that some sufferings are brought upon us simply for the manifestation of the glory of God and his works, according to these words of the gospel. Neither did this man sin nor his parents, but that the works of God might be manifested in him. 3:30. And again, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified by it. 3:31. There are also other sorts of vengeance. with which some who have overpassed the bounds of wickedness are smitten in this life. As we read that Dathan and Abiram and Korah were punished, or above all, those of whom the apostle speaks. Wherefore God gave them up to vile passions and a reprobate mind, 3:32. And this must be counted worse than all other punishments. For of these the psalmist says, they are not in the labors of men, neither shall they be scourged like other men, 3:33. For they are not worthy of being healed by the visitation of the Lord which gives life, and by plagues in this world, as in despair they have given themselves over to lasciviousness, unto the working of all error, unto uncleanness, 3:34. And as by hardening their hearts and by growing accustomed and used to sin, they have got beyond cleansing in this brief life and punishment in the present world. Men who are thus reproved by the holy word of the prophet. I destroyed some of you as God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, and you were as a firebrand plucked out of the burning, yet you return not to me, saith the Lord, 3:35. And Jeremiah, I have killed and destroyed thy people, and yet they are not returned from their ways, 3:36. And again, thou hast smitten them, and they have not grieved. Thou hast bruised them, and they refuse to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than the rock. They have refused to return. 3:37. And the prophet, seeing that all the remedies of this life will have been applied in vain for their healing, and already as it were despairing of their life, declares, the bellows have failed in the fire, the founder hath melted in vain, for their wicked deeds are not consumed. Call them reprobate silver, for the Lord hath rejected them. 3:38. And the Lord thus laments, that to no purpose has he applied this salutary cleansing by fire to those who are hardened in their sins, in the person of Jerusalem crusted all over with the rust of her sins, when he says, set it empty upon burning coals, that it may be hot, and the brass thereof may be melted, and let the filth of it be melted in the midst thereof. Great pains have been taken, and the great rust thereof is not gone out, no, not even by fire. Thy uncleanness is execrable, because I desire to cleanse thee, and thou art not cleansed from thy filthiness. 3:39. Wherefore, like a skillful physician who has tried all saving cures, and sees there is no remedy left which can be applied to their disease, the Lord is in a manner overcome by their iniquities, and is obliged to desist from that kindly chastisement of his, and so denounces them, saying, I will no longer be angry with thee, and thy jealousy has departed from thee. 3:40. But of others whose heart has not grown hard by continuance in sin, and who do not stand in need of that most severe and, if I may so call it, caustic remedy, but for whose salvation the instruction of the life-giving word is sufficient, of them it is said, I will improve them by hearing of their suffering. 3:41. We are well aware that there are other reasons also of the punishment and vengeance which is inflicted on those who have sinned grievously. Do not expiate their crimes, nor wipe out the deserts of their sins, but that the living may be put in fear and amend their lives. And these we plainly see were inflicted on Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and Baasha, the son of Ahijah, and Ahab, and Jezebel, when the divine reproof thus declares, behold, I will bring evil upon thee, and will cut down thy posterity, and will kill of Ahab every male, and him that is shut up, and the last in Israel. And I will make thy house like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baha, the son of Ahijah, for that which thou hast done to provoke me to anger, and for making Israel to sin. The dogs also shall eat Jezebel in the field of Jezreel. If Ahab die in the city, the dog shall eat him, but if he die in the field, the birds of the air shall eat him. 3:42. And this which is threatened as the greatest threat of all, thy dead body shall not be brought to the sepulchre of thy fathers. 3:43. It was not that this short and momentary punishment would suffice to purge away the blasphemous inventions of him who first made the golden calves and led to the lasting sin of the people. and their wicked separation from the Lord, or the countless and disgraceful profanities of those others. But it was that by their example the fear of those punishments which they dreaded might fall on others also, who, as they thought little of the future, or even disbelieved in it altogether, would only be moved by consideration of things present, and that owing to this proof of his severity, they might acknowledge that there is no lack of care for the affairs of men, and for their daily doings, in the majesty of God on high. And so, through that which they greatly feared, might the more clearly see in God the rewarder of all their deeds. We find it is true that even for lighter faults some men have received the same sentence of death in this world as that with which those men were punished, who, as we said before, were the authors of a blasphemous falling away, as happened in the case of the man who gathered sticks on the Sabbath, 344, and in that of Ananias and Sapphira, who through the sin of unbelief kept back some portion of their goods, not that the guilt of their sins was equal, but because they were the first found out in the new kind of transgression. And so it was right that they had given to others an example of sin, so also they should give them an example of punishment and of fear, that anyone who should attempt to copy them might know that, even if his punishment were postponed in this life, he would be punished in the same way that they were at the trial of the judgment hereafter. And since in our desire to run through the different kinds of trials and punishments, we seem to have wandered somewhat from our subject, on which we were saying that the perfect man will always remain steadfast in either kind of trial. Now let us return to it once more. Chapter 12. How the upright man ought to be like a stamp, not of wax, but of hard steel. And so the mind of the upright man ought not to be like wax or any other soft material, which always yields to the shape of what presses on it, and is stamped with its form and impress, and keeps it until it takes another shape by having another seal stamped upon it. And so it results that it never retains its own form, but is turned and twisted about to correspond to whatever is pressed upon it. But he should rather be like some stamp of hard steel, that the mind may always keep its proper form and shape inviolate, and may stamp an imprint on everything which occurs to it the marks of its own condition, while upon it itself nothing that happens can leave any mark. Chapter 13. A question whether the mind can constantly continue in one and the same condition. Germanus. But can our mind constantly preserve its condition unaltered and always continue in the same state? Chapter 14. The answer to the point raised by the questioner. Theodore. It is needful that one must either, as the Apostle says, be renewed in the spirit of the mind, 345, and daily advance by pressing forward to those things which are before, 346. Or, if one neglects to do this, the sure result will be to go back and become worse and worse. And therefore the mind cannot possibly remain in one and the same state. Just as when a man, by pulling hard, is trying to force a boat against the stream of a strong current, he must either stem the rush of the torrent by the force of his arms, and so mount to what is higher up, or letting his hands slack and be whirled headlong downstream. Wherefore it will be a clear proof of our failure if we find that we have gained nothing more. Nor should we doubt but that we have altogether gone back, whenever we find that we have not advanced upward. Because, as I said, the mind of man cannot possibly continue in the same condition. Nor, so long as he is in the flesh, will any of the saints ever reach the height of all virtues, so that they continue unalterable. For something must either be added to them or taken away from them. And in no creature can there be such perfection as not to be subject to the feeling of change, as we read in the book of Job.